This is CIOI 101.5 FM. The Hawk is on the air.
My next guest is kind of fun to interview. I'm kind of excited about it because, like a dumb doughhead that I do, I go through my social media and I always check for, you know, the weirdos. You always got to look through because you accept friendships on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and everything. You go, okay, who's this patchouli chomp? Who's this one? Who's that one? What do they want? Nothing. Well, they want something from me. But then I saw this this one person. I went, oh, it's a musician. And her name's Claire, and I think she's from Toronto. So I did the old investigative journalism thing that I've never done in my entire life. I clicked on a few things and went, oh, I really like this. And then I saw a name and went, she worked with Peter Elkis, my buddy. Oh, this is super cool. This is awesome. I love all of this. This is great. Hey, welcome to Steel City Music. It's Claire Whitehead. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
I told you well before, I don't do interviews. I just have chats, and those are my introductions. Mm-hmm. You know,
I love it.
Well, yeah. I really can't do the CBC thing, you know, where it's just like give you the giant backgrounder, right? It's just like, oh my god, you know, is this?
But I loved that backgrounder. I loved hearing your story of how you found me.
It's legit, dude. I'm a little paranoid on social media lately. But welcome to the show. I'm glad that you took the time out to have a chat with us. And how are you? How is Claire Whitehead doing in the midst? Because before I get into the music, I want to get into the how do you feel about this whole changing of the guard in the dumpster that's below us, America?
Gosh.
Do you feel better?
I feel so much better. I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. I'm so glad to see Trump is gone.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't know if I have the highest hopes for Biden, but you know, he's not my president. At least I'm just happy that the change has happened. Yeah.
I think we're all a little bit changed. I mean, you're switching out one old white man for another, but at least this one's not racist or misogynistic or hasn't done any horrible things to people that we're aware of. So I guess we'll just go with that. So let's get into, and I brought this up because with you, I did some reading on you, and it was all about how does Claire Whitehead write, what inspires her, that sort of thing. And you state that you're very much influenced by film that you consume and culture. So is that the genesis of Thelma, the new
Absolutely.
Country opera?
Yeah, absolutely. That's 100% it. I basically watched Thelma and Louise for the first time when I was like the age of 30 and going through, had already been through a lot of experiences myself of, you know, little experiences of misogyny or also just getting closer to my female friends in my life and understanding how important that is to me and like to, as a woman, like moving through life and through the world. And so I saw this story of Thelma and Louise and how they just like bonded and grew together through their trials and tribulations. And I felt like I couldn't not say something about it.
It made that much of an impact on you then.
Yeah. I can't explain it fully, but yeah, it did. And I was originally I had an idea to do a little cover show where I just play a cover song that I thought related to each moment in the character Thelma's journey. But then my friend urged me on to try and write all of the songs instead of doing covers. So
when you say
up on that challenge,
you say write all the songs. How many songs did you put together for this? Was it an EP that you recorded or was it an LP?
It's, I guess, I don't know what the definition of EP LP is numbers wise, but it's 9 songs altogether.
That's an LP.
I guess it's
an album.
It's an LP.
You did an album, yeah.
It's, and it's actually, I guess, my first time recording a full length album. I had a rock band in the past and we had a 4-song EP. This was my first endeavor into trying to record a full album of music, and it's been really fun.
Now, this rock band that you had before, and you did an EP, was that, were you fronting the band or were you just a member of a collective? Was that how it worked?
Yeah. So that was my first band where I was I fronted it and I wrote the songs. It was called Karoo. You know, that was really fun. I played with my friends in Toronto. We played a couple shows around the city, a couple shows you know, Peterborough, St. Catharines and stuff. And then I started writing Thelma kind of in the background. And then the pandemic hit. So the band couldn't really get together anymore. And so Thelma just kind of developed
on everything.
Its own.
I read that you actually put on a show with the country opera Thelma, and you intersected it with scenes of the film. Nine songs. Does that mean nine scenes?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. So I'm trying to think now how it goes. Yeah, what I do is I play a scene, a clip from the film, and then I play a song after it. So it goes back and forth, a clip from the film, then a song, clip from the film, then a song.
Right.
And I also divide it into three acts, basically. I sort of like, in my mind, divided the drama that I was trying to show into three different phases. And in between each of those, I also play a little bit of violin into a loop pedal. And so I create this sort of like looping, ongoing, building mood, ambiance, I guess. It's a very, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of pieces to the live show. It's not a normal show.
It seems so. In one hand, I think that you writing something like this and discovering this movie, and it inspires you to write something, it can be cathartic is a term, I guess, for you in some ways. But in the other, this is my fear side, I express this, is that, well, you were in a band before and you had people with you performing. So there's a sense of, okay, well, this is us and it's not just me up here. But this country opera thing, this just sounds like it's all you. Like this is, there's no buffer. This is you and that's it.
Yeah. I did develop the whole thing and, you know, wrote and arranged all of it and planned out the whole performance and took care of pretty much every piece of the performance myself. I did give myself a bit of a break by asking a friend to sing harmonies with me on a couple songs.
Sure.
So when I'm up there, I'm not entirely alone for the whole thing, which is like, whew, a bit of a relief because that can be a lot of pressure. But most of it I'm up there by myself. And the first time that I did it, you're not practicing with a band, so you don't have anybody with you backstage before you go on who's sort of like there to rev you up and be like, this is, we know what we're doing now, right? Let's just all do the thing that we practiced together. Like it's, no one else was with me when I was practicing at home.
Right.
So I had to just go up there and perform the whole thing on my own and nobody in the audience knew what to expect. It received lots of positive feedback, so I figured I should keep doing it.
You're listening to Steel City Music. Your host, Gunnar, here. My special guest at this time is Claire Whitehead. She just put out recently, I believe in September, a new LP. She's been releasing singles through Bandcamp. It's called Thelma, a Country Opera. And that's quite a story about you being up on stage and doing the looping and doing everything up in front of everyone. How long was the live show when you first did it?
I think it came to about 45 minutes.
So 45 minutes in total. And then and at the end of it, what was some of the feedback that you got over this?
So I had a lot of women, like friends of mine who were women, come up to me and they sort of had this look in their eyes and they were like, wow, that was really, you were saying things and you were expressing things there that I've kind of needed or I like that I, sure. I wasn't expecting and that like felt really meaningful to me. And I, cause there's, you know, there's some pretty heavy themes in the film, around like sexual assault and sexism and those experiences that I do bring forward a bit in the performance. I don't you know, lay it on too thick or anything, because I don't want it to be difficult for anybody to watch in any way. But I think that a lot of the women in the audience felt pretty impacted by it from the feedback that I got. And then other feedback was just friends saying like, hey, that was really cool. That someone said I should do it at a fringe festival, because it felt like a very like multidisciplinary.
I was going to ask if you had done something like that, but as you said earlier, yeah. COVID hit. So how many possible shows could you put together in such a timeline because of that?
Yeah, well, I actually did have, I think I had about 4 or 5 shows booked for the spring,
right.
And had to cancel them all. So.
Did you not do this over Zoom? Because this is what I always talk about with a lot of artists. You know, when this hit back in March, and when it was like halfway through March where the hammer came down, everyone's like, look, we're shutting it all down. And all of the music industry, all the arts, culture, everybody took a huge hit, not just them, but I mean, everybody. As we know, but there's the pivot to let's do this online, and how do we do this online, and how do I do this?
Yeah.
Did you not do this once on Zoom?
I did, actually. Yeah, so my friends Michael and Jordy, who run Glad Day Bookshop in Toronto, they amazingly immediately when the pandemic hit, they set up this Glad Day TV series on Zoom, and they had a lot of different artists, all kinds of stuff. They had drag queens, they had people like just juggling like anything, and they invited me to come do Thelma through that. So yeah, I performed it. It was sort of like their Zoom account, and then they like invited me in, and we set it up, and then people joined. It was an interesting experience performing on Zoom, because you don't hear the audience feedback or anything like that. But there was people in the chat, like, you know, giving their claps and some feedback. So it was honestly really rewarding and nice to do after like a month or so being, you know, isolated in your apartment.
Right. Because you need that creative outlet, because you're used to playing and you're used to doing that. So that only makes sense. Now, now having said that, you only did it once, and you won't be doing it again? Or is that maybe something in the new year you're going to maybe rethink how you're going to do it, that sort of thing?
Right. Yeah. So So one of the shows that is on hold was I was going to play Kazoo Fest in Guelph, and they very generously have said, you know, we'll hold a spot for you if we're going to do the festival again in 2021.
Right.
So that's like, cross my fingers, hope that happens. But otherwise, I'm thinking of setting up another Zoom show. I might actually be doing one right now I'm in London, Ontario. I just got out of Toronto for a bit. There is a series here called the Woodshop or the Woodshed. And they hold shows. It's like in someone's garage. She sets up shows there. And for the pandemic, she has someone who can actually live stream. So there will only be a couple people there in the shed, but then it will be filmed and live streamed. So anyone can watch it from anywhere. And that we're planning for December, early December. So,
So that's just coming up then. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So yes, I almost forgot about that, but that's something that's coming up.
Oh, I know I'm supposed to be doing something in December aside from celebrating Christmas or the holidays of some sort. That's right. I have to perform. Silly me. Hey, I'm talking to Claire Whitehead on Steel City Music. She's my special guest right now. She has an album that is out as of September. 2 singles are out on Bandcamp right now. It's called Thelma, a country opera. Just want to touch quickly on the influences that you have in your music. Now, you mentioned that you were in an earlier band. When I heard your vocals, I immediately, for me as a listener, and everyone does this, I felt like an energy of a Serena Ryder there at some points.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
and I could see people saying, well, you know, the Sheryl Crow thing. I can say, okay, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. You know, I get that. But yeah. I went because of my terrible falling down the rabbit hole personality of clicking on links. And I did this. And I found myself a little bit lost for the last, because I was supposed to be doing other things. I was secretly hiding. I've been secretly hiding in my office saying I'm doing stuff. But I'm not. I'm listening to Land of Talk albums.
Oh my gosh, I love Land of Talk. And they're my favorite band.
Right? Okay. So, and then I started going through their Wikipedia page. I'm like going, oh. And then I'm listening to some of the music and I went back last year. So I went, oh, I can see what she's talking about here. Why she enjoys this artist so much, Elizabeth Powell. Because if you listen to some of the stuff that you're doing, yeah, it's roots. There's a roots rock country feel that I can hear, but there's also a bigger sound to everything. And is that something that that you imparted to Peter Elkis, who worked on this with you?
Yeah. So Peter has been great. He's amazing. So I started working with him through, I think a friend of mine knew that he was starting to record in his studio, his home studio.
Right.
And we spoke about this project and he was like, oh, country, you know, country sort of rocky, bluesy. That's my wheelhouse. Like I can totally do that. And we started working on it and like all the tracks are, two guitar, I think all the tracks, almost all the tracks are two guitars, and it's me and him. And we sat there playing those guitar beds, sitting across from each other with one mic in the middle and a mic on each guitar. And we just like played through the whole song, and he played these really amazing bluesy riffs, country kind of bluesy riffs over top of my guitar. And so we were playing live together and just playing off of each other. So the whole album has this really wonderful sort of like live jammy kind of underbed to all the songs, which I just love. And it suits the songs and the style of the album so well. Yeah. So Peter's great. He's a great recorder and producer. Yeah. Hi, this is Claire Whitehead. You can listen to my new album, Thelma, A Country Opera, on Bandcamp or Spotify. You can find me at ClaireWhitehead.music on Instagram as well. No, I won't accept that this is it. And now that I'm the one most fit, I'll sharpen my eyes to the open door and find a song. And wash despair.
pistol when you took your shot. There's nothing too wrong to do if I can make it up.
Next guest on Steel City Music is new to me, and maybe not new to you, but maybe they are. On the line with me right now is Louis from Mr. Mule. How are you, sir?
Not too bad, Jim. How you doing, man?
I'm good. I have to stop joking about the election that Joe Biden won, and everybody that I've been talking to, as far as like the chats that I've been doing, is just like huge dump jokes. Like, they're just dumping all over everything, right? And it's just like, I don't know why I do this, Lou. It's like, I want to talk about the music, but the first thing I go to is like, let's just crap on Trump. And everyone just like, yeah!
Orange man bad.
Orange man bad. Now we good. It's a beautiful day here in Hamilton, Ontario. That's where we're doing this interview from. I think it's 21 degrees outside. The sun is outside. And just a full disclosure to everyone, it is a pre-recorded interview due to the COVID pandemic. We haven't been back in the Hawk studios for some time. But hopefully, come 2021, myself and Louie and other people can sit down in the studio, spin some tunes, and have a chat about how they got started, that sort of thing. So, Louie, Tell me about Mr. Mule, how the trio got together, or were you always a trio?
So we've always more or less been a trio. We did kind of have a fourth member for a single show that we did at Doors Pub about a year back now.
Right.
But it didn't really pan out.
Flat Earther?
No, it's you know, sometimes things don't mesh. I don't want to push him.
No, don't. Was he an asker?
God, no. I think we try and keep people like that at an arm's length in our lives.
But he left under good terms then.
Yeah, for
sure. Okay, good.
So we've more or less been a trio the whole time. We've known each other since high school.
What high school did you guys go to?
Oh, we all went to Cardinal Newman in Stony Creek.
Oh, Crickers, eh?
Yeah.
Cool, man.
So Anthony is our drummer. Andrew is our other guitarist / bassist. We switch between them depending on who's written what.
Yeah.
Anthony was in a couple other local outfits. He was in Beach Bats for a while.
Okay.
And Andrew was in Pluto Adrift. They're kind of... they've been on hiatus for a couple of years now, 3 or 4 years now, but yeah.
But this act, Mr. Mule, just got together over the last 2 years then?
Yeah, so we have no official start date.
Oh, really?
Put it that way. Yeah, Andrew and I started creating music in my basement when we were both working night shift in 2018. So we were just making music at 4 a.m. and, Anthony just kind of heard what we were doing, got involved, and it just kind of took off from there.
Now, the fact that you're making music and you're working night shift, is that the reason why you're doing this style of music? Because, you know, your brain is completely fried?
Yes, absolutely. That is to a T, exactly why we're doing it.
How did you guys come up with the title of Goblin Rock Trio?
Oh, Goblin Rock. I don't know. We switch between basement rock and Goblin Rock a lot. I think we all have this preconception of our music as sounding like something that came out of a cave,
sure.
written by goblins. We kind of just landed on that, threw it up there, and left it.
Now, with your creation of this the music, the four songs that are on Transmission from the Bog. Aside from the 4 o'clock in the morning type of recordings and being super tired from your job and everything, is there any style of music that you guys were influenced from that you could give the listener a comparison to?
Oh, absolutely. We're pulling from a lot of different places. I think not one of us in the band is really finds influence in a similar thing. I would say we all really pull from different places. I would say more like progressive rock, maybe leaning into, you know, the heavier elements of metal. We kind of teeter on the edge of the two because I don't want to call it rock in the sense that it's like traditional and it's not quite metal. Cause if you showed a metalhead our music, they would be like, what is this?
This isn't the metal that that I'm into.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to try and fool anybody with what I'm calling our genre. You know, I think that's kind of why we ended up on Goblin Rock, just because we didn't want to sell ourselves as something.
Right. But we'll pigeonhole you into a certain style. I only ask that question just because it helps the listener go, like, have like some sort of something weird to draw from. You know.
Yeah.
4 tracks on the Transmission from the Bog. Tell me about Pet Shop Drifter.
Oh, Pet Shop Drifter is the instrumental off the album. It's the first song. It's probably our more like stoner rock focused song. It's got like some samples in there from a movie called The Gweary Wrath of God from 1972 that are that Andrew is like a really big fan of, and he wanted to get those samples in. So to me, it's like I've described it as our stoner rock X-90s hip-hop mashup, just for the vocal sampling.
It sounds it really sets the tone for the EP, because as soon as I heard it, I went, oh, right? I wasn't immediately hit with like the abrasive like heaviness right away. So it made me listen to the track just a little bit more.
Got panicky over that damn silence. It always comes just before someone gets killed.
Talking to Mr. Louis from Mr. Mule. They have a new EP called Transmission from the Bog. 4 songs on it. You can check it out on Bandcamp, and it's only a mere $2 for the entire album. We just played Pet Shop Drifter. Tell me about the second track, Bury Me at Randall's Reef.
So Bury Me at Randall's Reef is actually kind of our ode to like an infamous Hamilton landmark. I'm not sure if you're aware of Randall Reef.
Oh, I have enough social activist friends who made me learn about Randall's Reef 20 times a day.
Yeah.
And I was like, I had no idea it was that bad.
It is. I can't remember if it is the worst or the second worst natural disaster in Canada, ongoing natural disaster in Canada.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily written about that. It's really a song about feeling dead in your own hometown, like not almost like a sense of decaying of your lifestyle as things change. within a place that you've always known to be one way.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Randall Reef is kind of the analog to that.
Okay.
Because now they're paving it in. They're filling in Randall Reef, so we kind of wanted to go full circle with that.
Tell me a little bit about Violent Light.
So Violent Light is more of our like thrashy song off the album. I can't speak heavily to the influences of this one because this one was actually mainly written by Anthony, our drummer.
Mm-hmm.
But it to just speak to the lyrics, it's about a man being violently electrocuted. And what pursues after.
So it's not a pop song, safe to say.
I wouldn't say so. Not something I would show to my mother.
Excellent. We're spinning that right now. man, thanks for taking the time to chat with us. And where do we go to find out more about you and find out more about the band and social media and all the other fun things?
So we're on Instagram at Mr_Mule. We are on Bandcamp, SoundCloud, Spotify, my God, Apple Music, iTunes, most of your major streaming platforms. We are up there right now if you want to come give us a listen. Honestly, if you want to know more about us, hit me in the DMs. I'm pretty open to it. We don't have an influx of messages coming in.
Now that we got the giggles out of our system and our pre-chit chat on the recording, my next guest is Alex Worms. I think for some strange reason, her and I always have these really long, drawn-out, laughy conversations before the interview and sometimes after the interview. She was one of my first guests that I had when I returned to the airwaves up at the Hawk for Steel City Music in 2019. And she released her album back then, which was that was her latest EP at the time, Burgundy, and which had some success, didn't it, Alex?
Yeah, it was a really exciting EP release for me. We got I got to play on live television, and we went on a Ontario tour. Lots of fun on the radio with that one too. So it was It was great.
Well, yeah. it was kind of a nice story to be a part of on my end as far as the media goes, because facts are you were a young artist that I just met, and you were working with the people over at Grand Avenue. I believe Amy King was doing the engineering, and you were kind of being a sponge at the time, learning as much as you could from her and others. And then you went on to, because of that, you actually went on to win a Hamilton Arts Award for an emerging artist at the time as well, which was, it was really nice. It was just nice. To me, the story played out really nice for you in 2019. And then COVID hit, and then now here you and I are sitting on a phone.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And it was a little, you know, I did spend a little bit of time, you know, figuring, like, and by a little bit of time, I mean a couple months, where at the beginning of lockdown in Ontario, March and April, where I was kind of going, what am I going to do? Because I did have a really, really great year in 2019 with the EP and the Hamilton Arts Award. And I really felt this huge sense of momentum. You know, I went on my first, like the longest tour I've ever been on. And that was exciting. And I thought my mindset was very much, great, I'm going to rinse and repeat. I'm going to be doing more and more of this. I'm going to release EPs. I'm going to do full band shows. I'm going to tour in my car. And that was my plan for this year. And of course, then that the pandemic kind of put an end to all of that. And we had to do a macro pivot right. to live streaming and that sort of thing. So it definitely took me a little bit of time to figure out what to do next and how to continue. And I had to reinvent my plans, because, you know, I wasn't going to just wait it out. And it's kind of become very clear that the situation isn't, we're not going to return back to normal anytime soon. So we're here, I guess, to talk a little bit about what I decided to do and
the big follow-up. Yeah. Well, you had the learning curve just like everyone else that in the music industry, arts industry, cultural industry, every industry, really, about how to promote yourself and how to keep active and putting out content by going on through the virtual world online. But you've also been recording as well, and you've done three songs. Where did you record them, and who did you do them with?
Yeah, so we recorded three songs at Noble Street Studio this time in Toronto. And I actually met the engineer producer on my new songs, Micah Dern. He and I met while I was on a radio tour promoting Burgundy last year. And we kind of got talking about maybe recording something. We had a lot of, we agreed on a lot of things. We like a lot of the same music. And he at the time was an intern at Noble Street. So we went there. And they have, I am a pianist, as you know, they have this beautiful Fazioli grand piano down there. It's worth like $500,000. And it was just beautiful. So Micah definitely kind of lured me down there by telling me about this piano. Right. And we went down to Noble Street for a day in July to record these three songs. And out of necessity, anyone who's heard, you know, my previous recordings will know that I usually like to go all out. I like lots of instruments, full rock band. I usually do string arrangements and lots of overdubs, and I like to go big.
Yeah.
But again, pandemic, right?
Right.
So what we did, we didn't go big this time. These are their solo recordings. And that's kind of how it had to be due to the situation. So it's just me and this beautiful piano on the next couple of songs. And it worked really, really nicely because I think, again, talking about how I've had to pivot to continue making music in 2020, it has been performing as a soloist, live streaming from my living room. So I think releasing recordings this way, you know, it kind of matches what I'm doing live now. And I think the simplicity of it is actually kind of beautiful. So it's been kind of a new learning curve for me as well, figuring out how to make the most out of a solo piano arrangement as opposed to what I was doing before, which was how do these eight instruments kind of work together mm-hmm. in a song. So it's been a fun process. And also it was done in a day.
which saves on money.
Yes. And on my patience. So,
there you go. So three songs were done. Two are going to be released later on. And you're going to release those in 2021, or are you going to release them before 2020 is out?
Because 2021.
2021, the next two songs. But one of the songs that you're releasing now on November 12th mm-hmm. is a Christmas song.
It is.
And I'll Be Home for Christmas is the track that you're going to release. Now, Alex, you and I both know there's 9 billion Christmas songs. There mm-hmm. has to be. there's so many of them. Why I'll Be Home for Christmas? What made you want to do this track?
Well, it is one of my favorites, my personal favorites. And why I chose this one, I guess the big reason is that it seemed to take on a whole new meaning this year because a lot of people under COVID health protocols, they can't go home for Christmas. And it's really sad. And the line, the lyrics of I'll Be Home for Christmas, you know, the line in there is I'll be home for Christmas if only in my dreams. So it just kind of hit a little differently this year. And that's why I decided to record it. And I think, you know, continuing to take, like, one reason I thought this year was the perfect year to put out a holiday single at all was that I really wanted to, I guess, fill a little bit of that space, in the Christmas season. I think there are a lot of things, a lot of events and parties and things that people usually like to do that they can't this year. So I thought the least I can do is give people something to listen to with to fill some of the time. And, you know, I'm very active on social media, which I love. I can do some Christmas concerts. I can, you know, keep people a little bit of company online through putting out this song. So that was kind of my mindset. Hi, this is Alex Worms. You can check out my new holiday single, I'll Be Home for Christmas, at alexworms.com.
I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and presents on the tree. Christmas Eve will find me
You're listening to C101.5 FM, The Hawk, from Mohawk College in Hamilton, Ontario, Hamilton's alternative.